Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Our guest today is Caitlin Mogenthal. Caitlin, please tell us where you are in the world and what you do for a living.
Yeah, so I am the founder of Pulp Pantry. I'm in Los Angeles, California. I'm the founder of Pulp Pantry. I'm getting used to it, but we are actually changing our name to Trashy this week.
Oh, cool.
And yes, we are actually going live with that and very excited to share more on what's happening there and why we're rebranding and all the things.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was looking at your LinkedIn and I saw it said Trashy. I didn't know that was because of like a rebrand. I thought that was just like, I mean, I get the kind of like pun of it, which I really loved, but yes. I think it's a great name too. So that's funny.
You know, very mixed reactions. We've got a lot of people who are... who are definitely not excited about this transition, but the core audience that we're trying to reach, I would say, is pretty jazzed about it. So very excited about that.
I love it. That's awesome. So I'm just curious, you know, could you tell us a little bit about your background and, you know, what got you interested in this space? I know upcycling is kind of the core of your business and how you got started with like developing this product. So can you tell us a little background about, you know, how you got interested in this space?
Yeah. So I was an environmental science major in college and really thought I was going to go into a hard science degree. I really my motivation for getting involved with really the climate movement was, you know, I saw An Inconvenient Truth in eighth grade. And I'm not going to lie, like ever since that film, I just got so passionate about climate crisis and feeling like there wasn't enough of a call to action for, I think, just everyday people to be part of this issue that is going to transform so many of our lives and really impact so many of our lives and impact my generation and generations to come. So, you know, it was really interesting because actually when the idea for Pulp Pantry came about, I had been dealing with a lot of frustration being in the climate space and, you know, being in kind of the sciences and seeing, you know, man, when you get into the science, a career in science, sometimes like the research you're doing, you know, I remember someone bragging about a Nature article that was like one of the most well shared articles. And it was only like 300 reposts or something by press. And I was like, man, it's just so crazy that, you know, as everyday consumers and the general population, we just don't have that much connection to science and to what's happening with kind of scientific research and new innovations in climate. And the same thing was happening in the environmental, I would say, nonprofit space, right? In advocacy and activism. I feel like there was just a big disconnect. I was interning for Environment California and, you know, my job was to stand on the side of the road with a sign that said, honk if you love solar. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I realized I was like, what is really the impact? Like, how are we really reaching everyday people? Because at the end of the day, that's the only way we're going to make a big shift in this movement is transforming kind of everyday consumers from what is a linear consumption model to being really more mindful about buying, consuming in a way that can help us to ease into kind of this new, I would say, more climate conscious circular economy. And so that's what I got really excited about starting a business in the space, because I think brands are the new currency in a lot of ways. Like, we are media companies and we have the tools to generate awareness for, and especially as mission-based brands, like generate awareness, not only for, you know, buying a product that is maybe more in line with our values today as consumers, but truly is just also a platform for talking about some core issues like food waste and climate change for us. So that's kind of where, not really where the idea started, of course, but really what my background was and kind of what led me to connect, I would say, building in this space, a company to really where I had intended to launch my career.
Yeah, that's really interesting you said that, because I actually had somebody on the podcast yesterday that's based out of New York, and he has a, I don't think upcycle is the exact term that he used, but it was similar in the sense that he makes sneakers where essentially, I can't remember the exact term that he used, but it was similar in that way where every component of his sneaker line that he made, all the components can come apart and they all can be directly like reused and recycled in all their each individual ways. And one really interesting thing that he mentioned was like, he's like, the first time that this really happened, like if you remember back when like printer cartridges and people like printing at home a lot all the time and things like that before everything was like totally digital, you know, you used to get those and it would come with like its own shipping label and you would send it back and they would just basically like refill them and send them out. And he kind of had the same notion with what he was doing, which was basically using a brand and using consumer marketing to have like open a conversation and educate and discuss is one of the best ways you can do it, because trying to connect consumers, like you say, directly with, you know, academic academia and like academic articles or like things are just very like dense and scientific can be really difficult. So I think it's an important perspective for like young entrepreneurs. Yeah, they're really interested and have these passions. I want to, you know, can, you know, be a part of this kind of movement. It's one of the best ways that you can do it. So I think it's really amazing. And I obviously applaud you for that. Both of you guys that I've spoken to, and I think it's going to really help in getting people's eyes on things like this. So can you tell me a little more about, you know, obviously this, your background makes perfect sense with, you know, what you did as your major and obviously your passion for this type of work and visibility of it. So what kind of led you to like the more specific brand with, you know, what the product ended up, you know, becoming? I'm sure, you know, some of it was kind of, I'm sure maybe circumstantial. It's like, you know, usually, or maybe it wasn't, maybe you like had this idea and this is exactly what you wanted to do. But tell me a little bit more about how you went from these, like turn this passion into brand and developing a product and having so much success like you've had.
You know, no, actually, I mean, when I started the company, it was really actually focused on, I was at a friend's house. I saw her juicing a carrot and I was blown away by the amount of waste produced. I had been working in nonprofits, like I said, but I was working specifically at an urban elementary school garden, a Title I school where kids were on the free breakfast, free lunch program offered through the LA Unified School District. And what was really frustrating for me was I was noticing pizza sauce, french fries counted as your daily vegetable. And like kids were getting muffins, these sugar laden, you know, refined starch muffins with really no nutritional value. And as teachers, we would always talk about, oh my gosh, like our students are struggling in school. Community health outcomes are struggling. Like this is all connected back to food and it's all connected back to access to healthy food resources. So it was just really interesting because basically through that journey and that process, those, that connection moment of, oh my gosh, you know, I'm working in a school district where kids are struggling to access healthy, nutritious food resources. And yet in the garden, we are growing food from scratch. We're teaching kids how to cook and they're getting really engaged and actually being a part of this healthy eating journey because they're feeling empowered and excited about having taken ownership, you know, over that aspect. Then I was going to, you know, my friend's house, seeing her juicing a carrot. She had driven off campus a bunch of miles to go get some organic produce, juice it. And there was all this waste. And I was like, oh my God. And then calling up a bunch of juice companies across Los Angeles, realizing they were all sending this resource to the landfill. And of course, as an environmental science background, the biggest thing we learned about was like food waste and how much of an impact food waste has on climate, like producing methane gas emissions. Food is actually the number one solid waste stream in our landfills. So about 34% of landfill solid matter is actually food, which is really upsetting because that is a lot. And, you know, 40% of food goes to waste in the United States. So it's a really drastic problem. And I felt like, you know, there was this easy low-hanging fruit of how could we work with LA-based juice companies to really take the resources that were highly nutritious, that were going to waste, but were still edible and really had a lot of value left in them to essentially help kids eat better. And so this is where really I had that kind of aha moment, but interviewing school food service managers, I realized there's just no budget for school food, which is why they're being fed crap. So it kind of started taking this evolution, went through farmers markets, testing a bunch of product ideas. We've gone through everything from dehydrated like pulp into baked goods made with the raw pulp, disgusting, I will say. And then even going into like almond milk pulp and making granolas with some of the fruit and veggie pulp. Then we went into baked granolas, and then we went into crackers, and then finally into chips. And really for me, the key things was, of course, farmers markets, learning firsthand, like what are people actually resonating with? What are they liking? What are they buying? What are the ingredients that are important to them? That really sped along the evolution process over, you know, I would say like 2016 to 2018 was doing farmers markets on the weekends, and 2018 went full-time into building Pulp Pantry. And then really it was in 2019 that I was like, well, I got into the Target incubator. You know, at that point, I was like, I want to build a national brand, like a national product line that is bringing upcycled into broader, like a category that will connect with everyday consumers. So something that's an app staple. I wanted to bring our cereals or our granolas into the market, but I interviewed a bunch of co-packers and no one would touch fresh produce, which is really was our different, like a point of difference. That was the whole reason for being, right? Was upcycling this organic, nutritious, fresh produce. So I actually moved into thinking about, okay, well, what are the barriers to using fresh produce? And a lot of it is related to, of course, like existing manufacturing, like equipment and paradigms. So I felt like chips was actually a category where working with the existing machinery, we could still have the fresh produce be integrated, even though it wasn't really being done, we could still integrate it into that machinery and that process. And so I called up like 50 co-packers over the course of a month and found only two that were willing to give it a shot. And then ended up working with one who I've been working with for now 4 years building this product line. So it's gone through many iterative processes, but and a lot of it, you know, bottlenecks exist, of course, with operations and just not giving up and just saying, this is the idea is what I'm attached to, that the concept of bringing upcycled foods into the mainstream and really the solutions around upcycling to fight food waste. I think there's a lot of value that is lost in our food system, and we have to feed more people, right? By 2050, we have to grow 60% more food to feed the population, which is so scary because we can't do that. And I think underlying the main thing is, well, before we even think about clearing more land to grow food, why don't we think about solving a really problematic issue such as food waste and using those resources that are, I mean, recouping those resources that are lost to feed humanity. So that's what's always been kind of the common through line, is that concept. And then it's like, whatever product we can attach this to that's going to achieve our goals, great. And I think the chip category has been, it's competitive, it's really hard, but everyone connects around salty snacks. Like 94% of Americans consume salty snacks every week. So that's kind of the cool opportunity, right? It's like people are looking for better for you options in this category, and we want to make it a sustainable, healthier option, the fun, better choice. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that was going to be actually my next question, was kind of around what efforts you had to go through and if you had any struggles with finding like manufacturing partners doing something like this. So I know you said you've been through like 50 to 60 and you found one finally. What were kind of like some of the holdups for a lot of the folks that you talked to as manufacturing partners? Like, what was their kind of specific worry with doing it this way?
I think starting as a young brand, you know, obviously not having distribution or real retail traction, is they're taking a gamble on new brands, and it's an investment of their time, their line time, their staff, everything. Of course, like, you're paying for it in a lot of ways, but you know, they want long-term partners too, and they want to know. And I think this business, like, I mean, it's so easy to enter, but it's so hard to build a successful brand in this category. So I think the co-packing model is, it's probably really tough to spot the winners and try to take your bets on winners too. So I think that's one problem. And then the other problem is just when you're doing something innovative, and manufacturers don't want to do anything innovative. They want to do, we have this equipment, we run our process, we make money based off how much product throughput we have. So when you're trying to do something new, different, innovative, it's like, it's actually kind of for them, they're like, this is annoying, actually, because now my throughput might be lessened. I might have to tweak certain things about the line. And at the end of the day, I want to be lazy, and we just want to like put the product in the mixer and make the product and make it simple. So I think that's, again, finding a partner that's okay with taking some risks, taking some chances, and doing things a little bit of a hard way in the beginning to make a really innovative product come to life. Not everyone is open to that, and not everyone has the team and the specialty to kind of handhold through that process too. So I think that's the other challenge, is just matchmaking with a co-packer who shares the same values and really values innovation. So, I mean, the co-packer journey can be a really tough one. I think finding the right manufacturer is definitely a hard part and a barrier to growth.
Yeah, I think it's like you say, you know, I hear this so often from things that might not even be introducing something as like as new of a process as like, you know, working with upcycled processes like this with pulps and things. And, you know, I think the barrier to entry with those partnerships is kind of hard already with a new brand. And then having an entirely different process is, can obviously make that even more difficult. But yeah, that's really interesting, because, you know, you think about this kind of like push for commercializing a movement this way, which is really what we're doing with, like, you know, using marketing to educate and do things in this with this kind of movement and environmentalism. I think these are really important steps that people like should hear as young, again, as young entrepreneurs that might be, you know, looking to use their brand as a platform to educate and innovate towards environmentalism. Is, you know, it might take you a few extra steps, but to building these connections, it's going to grow over time. There's going to become more connections. There's going to be more of a community of people willing to take extra steps for the sake of this movement. So I think it's really important for people to hear. And yeah, that's amazing. So yeah, I want to ask you too. I know you mentioned that you started in the Target incubator. So what has kind of been your breakdown with, since you've had obviously great success, how much are you doing on kind of the wholesale side of things versus, you know, any other channels? Do you exist on Amazon? Or are you doing, how much like direct to consumer are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going through a very chaotic time right now because we are transitioning our brand to a new brand name. Right. And so it's funny because like 70% of our business was through retail and distribution. And to be honest, the missteps there, I mean, we had some amazing retail partners take bets on us early on. We got into 400 Target doors the year we launched. Whole Foods took us in to their local program, and we've grown to the full region, the Southern Pacific region. Thrive Market took a chance on us in the beginning. So we've had some amazing retail doors open, and we've been able to be really lucky to launch in national distributors like UNFI and KeHE, which are the big broadline distributors that service our natural and specialty channel. However, the learning for me was really, you know, we've been in retail now for 3 years. Or like, yeah, this will be our, this is our fourth year. And I, you know, the problem that I started noticing was just the product positioning didn't seem to be selling itself. And it is a huge investment to launch in retail. And I think a big part of it is like, you got to do the marketing, you got to do the sampling, you got to do all those things. So we invested heavily in sampling, and we saw massive wins on in terms of velocity. So like store movement off shelf with those efforts. But the number one feedback we were getting when people were seeing the bag and we're like, hey, come try a new veggie chip that just launched in store. People were like, pulp chips? And I actually posted recently on LinkedIn about this. It was amazing because we got a feature in Emma Chamberlain's podcast, and her whole thing was like this story about how she found pulp chips at Whole Foods and, you know, saw the name and was grossed out and like did a whole rant about how gross this sounded. This sounds disgusting. That sounds foul. And then she read the ingredients. And she was like, okay, well, this is actually a cool story. And, you know, I'm kind of curious. And she actually bought all of the flavors and fell in love with the chips. She was like, "These, I'm obsessed. They're so good."
That's awesome, man.
And I was like, oh my God, this is wild. How often do you get to hear a consumer story in this way, or of organically finding the product on shelf and what their experience was? And I was like, imagine how many people have had that same reaction to the pulp chip name and to the packaging and been like, this looks disgusting. Why would anyone make this kind of product, and then just didn't buy it, right? And didn't try it. So it's been a really interesting journey. And I think a lot of people, like, we're rebranding to a name that is kind of the same thing. It's like, it's called Trashy, right? And it's like, okay, well, that's kind of the same problem with pulp. Like, it doesn't sound appetizing. And
it's almost like a double down, honestly.
I have thought of it. It's funny because I've been surveying a lot of my customers, and some people are like so on board. They're like, yes to Trashy. I can understand where this is going, why you're getting bolder and more brash with the language. But underneath the surface, so underneath like the Trashy name, I think what I realized was we need to lead with flavor, and we need to lead with boldness, and we need to actually take a note from like what's working with, why is it that like all these junk food companies still are the mainstream choice that 80 to 90% of consumers buy chips from just five multinational brands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like they have 80 to 90% of the market share. How do we as an emerging brand cut through the noise? Because we don't want to just compete for that small 10% of the pie. We want to like move into that broader consumer base. And I think that's where I was like, it's the fun marketing. It's the bold colors. It's the, I want to put this in my mouth because I know it's going to taste good. So we did some R&D work with a Frito-Lay product developer. So we are changing our formulation a bit. And really just, he asked me, he was like, what do you want to focus on? You know, nutrition and upcycle, like maximizing upcycled, or do you want to focus on texture? And he's like, and there's a right, or do you want to focus on taste and texture? And he's like, and there is a right answer to this question. And I was like, yeah, taste and texture. And he goes, great. Because you cannot win with all of the sustainable things you're doing, all the amazing things you're doing. You can't win unless you have an amazing tasting product and amazing texture. So we did some work with him, which I'm really excited about. And it kind of made sense. We're like, we're going to have to change the packaging anyways with the formulation changes. So let's go into it. And then Trashy, I mean, so I guess on the packaging front, I realized retail was not working for us. It wasn't scalable unless we were really investing heavily in sampling with our current packaging. And we could just change the packaging a little bit, you know, make it more flavor forward. But I don't know. I just kind of had this feeling where I was like, this is a great opportunity for us to actually build a bolder voice in the category and not just be another natural, better for you brand on shelf. So we really went all in and just were like, let's do a full rebrand and let's give this another try, given the learnings of the past couple of years, which I'm super excited about because I feel like as a founder, you also are doing things just to stay in the game and be able to not burn out. And I feel like this is a creative renaissance for me as well, and one that I'm really excited about. But anyways, Trashy. So focusing on the flavor, jalapeno lime chips is the new product name instead of pulp chips. So really focusing on flavor, right? And we'll have barbecue chips, we'll have salt vinegar, we'll have sea salt. And then the last part of it is, well, this brand name, it's for us, it's really capturing the cultural moment and the cultural like inferences of what Trashy means. And I think that so then a visceral pulp that makes me think of like a food immediately. So again, this is a big experiment. We'll see what happens. And I'm really excited to take a step back from retail and focus on direct to consumer, focus on Amazon, focus on Thrive Market, focus on those online marketplaces where we can really have a direct connection to see what consumers are saying. What are they, how are they reviewing the product? What needs to be improved? How is our messaging connecting on social? And use that momentum to drive into retail.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Just the angle thinking of like going from being very like message forward and like, you know, transparency forward to how like the things are made, like on the packaging and just like everything about it. So it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, is being more forward as like in your flavors and your snacks. And then, you know, if you look closer and start to like really learn what the brand is about, like you realize what it is. It's like, oh, I never would have guessed that's pulp. Not like, oh, it's pulp. I guess I'll try it. Oh, it's actually really good. You know, like those two like psychology sequences of somebody like wanting to try something like this are so different. And I can see why you would go that direction with it. And I think you're right. There's like psychosis of the word trashy. That's like, it made me laugh as soon as I read it on your LinkedIn. I don't know what it is. It's like, I think it does. It strikes a nerve with people. Makes them think of something funny. And yeah, I think it's really interesting.
I mean, we're trashy humans. I'm like,
we all are, right? At the end of the day. Yeah.
We're all trashy. And it is funny because I think it's like, there's definitely the pushback is coming from like an older demographic of consumers who came to us, a lot of them from Shark Tank, right? Like A lot of our customers ended up being over 60 from Shark Tank, which is so interesting. That wasn't really the demographic that I felt like was going to resonate most with what we were doing. But it is really interesting because I will say, like, I have noticed that, like, the people who it is resonating with, well, those are the people that are the young, like, kind of millennial Gen Z consumers, and especially women that we're trying to connect with. I think 70% of our consumers are women. And so it's really hard because I think with this kind of angle and approach and positioning with a word like trashy, which has some negative inferences just in terms of like the cultural aspect. I don't know. I mean, I think in some ways it's like, I'm almost excited about turning people off, which is so weird, but I'm like, I think this means we're getting closer to really resonating with a specific core audience that gets the vibe and also like has more of that playful, I guess, fun, like dreams up all of these fun campaigns around the word trashy. And what does it mean to be trashy? I think two interesting comments that stand out. One was a friend who went on a rant about the food industry and how wasteful it is. And that was kind of her idea. I think she was connecting more to the idea of trashy and like the innuendos of just humans are trashy. We need to do things differently. Like, is this the world we want to create, right? And then there was another friend who was sending me voice notes and she was like, I love it because it's rejecting beauty standards. It's telling people that they can be imperfect and they can be like, you can have your trashy moments. And it's almost this like permissible indulgence in that. And so I think it's a very interesting thing because everyone has a different way that they interpret like what trashy means. And I love that. I want people to be able to take that name and obviously all the values that are underneath the company and just have fun with it and kind of bring their own creativity and ideas into what we're doing too.
That's amazing. And I think part of the genius of it is, it's like, okay, you call your brand, it's called trashy. It's like, well, like your assumption as a consumer is not like this brand is self like deprecating itself. Like they're not calling themselves trashy. Okay, what's the joke? And then like, that's where all like the streams of consciousness go to like, I think all of these interpretations. I think it's like part of the like the genius of the name really is like, it's going to be interpreted differently by everybody because they're not just going to assume like they're calling their own product trash. Like obviously that's not what it is. Like, so everybody's interpretation of what it means to them, I think can create a real connection with people and from a humor like standpoint, or, you know, maybe they do think about it a little bit deeper and say like, you know, projecting beauty standards or saying like, yeah, humans are trash. We got to do something different, or like we're trashy in the sense that like we just produce so much trash. Like not even that, like we're trashy as like personality standards, just like we produce so much waste, it's insane. So I think all of those things, no matter what way you interpret it, you know, I think it could really help like form a connection with consumers. And yeah, that's a really like kind of like genius angle. I think it's like the, because you're always gonna look for a deeper thing when you have something like that. Like you can imagine, yeah, like, the product is bad. You're like, okay, what's the joke here? You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, that's awesome.
Or really, they're gonna love it or hate it, right? And yeah. I'm like, let's rock with that. Let's use that as like our biggest tool. I think there's a lot of funny. I'm already like, I mean, I'm laughing because I'm reading my customer surveys online and people just say, they just say some really funny, funny, funny things. But we're going to have, I think we'll have fun reading some negative comments too.
Oh yeah, you gotta love it. You gotta just laugh at it. You can't let it get to you, right? That's awesome. So there's one thing I always like to ask everybody that comes to the podcast, you know, especially, you know, folks like you have obviously had some success and, you know, you've been around for, you know, quite a few years now. So obviously since I think 2018, you mentioned, was like your first, like, you know, kind of retail push, or you did a deal with Target. That was 2018.
2020.
Oh, 2020. Okay.
Gotcha. Great to launch in the pandemic. I mean, it was an adventure in its own, but anyways, but yeah, 2020.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say probably 90% of the people that come on the podcast started between 2018 and 2021. So people either started in the middle of COVID or started right before and had to pivot almost immediately right as they were like getting going. So if you listen to any of the other podcasts, there's some really interesting stories of people's like pivots during that time, or, you know, how they had the pivot actually coming out. They like took advantage of something that was happening during COVID and then had to pivot now that we're coming out. So those are really interesting conversations too. But I'm just curious, like you go back 4 years ago, the inception of the brand, you did your first big wholesale deal. If you can go back to that time, knowing everything you know now, everything you've learned along the way, being on Shark Tank, everything, if you can give yourself one piece of advice, personal, business, whatever it might be, what do you think that one thing would be?
Man, I mean, there's just so much that I think, I guess like the one thing that I would say is probably just sales cures everything. So I think like whatever you're doing, don't let it get in the way of sales. And just, I think when you like, again, sales cures everything. If you're going onto the market and you're not able to sell, okay, great. Like we need to do something. We need to change something to be able to sell. I don't know. I guess to me, it's like sales cures everything in terms of, you know, I think that I need capital to really make this business work. Well, if I can show traction in sales, then I can probably get the capital I need. I think focusing on that singular goal that's always been something that when I lose sight of that and I start spinning my wheels about like, what do I have to do with marketing? I got to get influencers plugged in, all that stuff. It kind of just is like, if you can just strip it back and really focus on putting one foot in front of the other by just selling, I think that that's really a way that I got caught up so many times on just in unfocused. And really sometimes when I lost sight of like sales, that's when, you know, you run into more barriers and challenges. And so I think to me, that's just a North Star that I wish that I had been way more diligent about following in the beginning, because things move so much faster when you're just focused on selling, focused on kind of tweaking things based on, you know, the feedback that you're getting really in the market selling, not just kind of behind this like this veil or curtain, right? Where you're like tweaking little things and whatnot and not really understanding maybe how everything that you're doing is resonating directly with your customer. Yeah, that would be my thing.
No, I appreciate that. And I think it's really good advice because like it is true. But in the life of a CEO of a young brand, I mean, you wear so many hats. There's so many tasks you have to take care of. There's so many different types of things you need to learn how to do. But at the end of the day, I mean, you can ground all of those things in making sales. I mean, you think about your marketing. What are you trying to do? You're trying to make more sales. Like you think about your accounting. Like I need to keep my books clean, understand where things are coming from so I can know where I have the money to spend to drive more sales. It's like everything does. It comes back to that. And I think we have a lot of entrepreneurs that listen. So many of the people that come on the pod, like they listen to all of our podcasts. You know, I think it's good advice for anybody just to know that, like, you know, when you get a little bogged down with like looking in 19 different directions, just remember that one direction that cures everything. You're right, which is sales. I think it's a great way to ground yourself. And, you know, when you're having to learn so much and, you know, wear so many different hats, I think that's really good advice, I think, for a young entrepreneur. So I really appreciate that. And I also just want to give you a quick opportunity for anybody listening, you know, they love you, they love the brand, they want to stay in touch, you know, just feel free to, I just want to give you an opportunity to shout out any of your socials, your website, how to stay in touch with you, how to stay in touch with the company, especially as you're going through this rebrand, people want to know when it's launching. Yeah, feel free to let everybody know.
Yeah, I mean, right, we have our site open, so trashychips.com is now a landing page for people to just stay posted on when pre-orders are ready. We're launching
awesome.
Earth Day 2024 is when actually pre-orders launch.
Oh, so, I love that.
Yes. So get ready because the site will be open for buying some sweet trashy merch and obviously some trashy chips. So I am super excited about that. And in the meantime, just dropping your email in. We have a Facebook group where we're going to be doing a ton of polling on flavor names and merch and trashy memes, whatnot. I'm excited.
That's amazing. I just put in mine. This landing page is fantastic, by the way.
Oh my God.
I love every part of this.
I was laughing. Actually, I did not do the landing page, so I can't take credit, but shout out to Tom who did. And I was like, this looks so bad.
Shout out Tom.
It's like, Tom, this looks so bad that it's good.
No, it's perfect. It's like everything you said and what you're trying to do with this rebrand, like he hit it on the head, I think. It's like perfect. I love this.
Tom gets it. I love it when we got Tom in along for the ride.
Awesome. That's so cool. And I voted for the jalapeno lime name. That was my vote. So.
Oh, good. I love it. I know. Yeah. We're trying to get, I don't know. Yeah. You know, we're doing hot takes. A lot of people are like, don't do any trashy names. The name is already enough. But then I'm like, but then some people are like, go all in.
Definitely go all in. I say, yeah, I love it. It's awesome. Caitlin, I want to say thank you again. I really appreciate you coming on. It was a great conversation. I think it's very illuminating in so many ways. There's so many people out there concerned with environmentalism and the climate crisis that trying to find out the best ways that they can support this movement and get involved themselves. I think entrepreneurship is one of the best ways to do it, honestly, to get the most eyes on, you know, messaging and education in this way. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Joe, for having me on.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Caitlin. Thanks, everybody.